Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, as we continue to relive and recap the drama of the playoff victory in Dallas, something we didn't actually discuss on yesterday's show that bears some discussion here. The Packers, after all these years, finally come out on the right end of a last play playoff decision. I don't mean to, you know, relive all these old memories, but the NFC Championship against the Giants, the field goal in 2007, the wild card game in Arizona in 2009, the sack and fumble and no face mask, the 49ers with the fourth quarter walk-off field goal, the overtime touchdown in Seattle, the overtime touchdown in Arizona last year. Five times in the McCarthy era, the Packers had seen their season end on the final play of a playoff game, and they finally won one of these.
Yeah, and in a couple of those occasions, it was teams that either went on to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl or just won the Super Bowl, showing you just how close that margin can be at times. But I think that this illustrates, I mean, if you're talking about something that truly epitomizes this season, I think Micah Hyde was the one who said it in the post-game locker room. I mean, that was really a microcosm of the year for the Packers, being able to, you know, they got out to an early lead, they had some adversity, it was tied, the game's on the line, and they came through at a very important time. And I think when you think of some of that positive mojo and just the way things have kind of fell into place for the Packers during what is now this 8-game winning streak, it was the perfect representation of that. And now it carries a lot of momentum into this NFC title game against Atlanta.
Yeah, you certainly can't get much more momentum in terms of the euphoria, the high of it all, than a walk-off victory like that, especially on the road.
Yeah.
When you're celebrating and 90-plus thousand people are practically silent and trudging away from their seats. But really, in a lot of ways, when you think about it, this game was very reminiscent of the Chicago game in the regular season, which the Packers needed so desperately to win at that time. You know, a big fourth quarter lead, a couple of touchdowns, the Bears come all the way back and get the game tied. And then when you absolutely had to have it, you got the play to Jordy Nelson, you got Mason Crosby out on the field to make the kick. Just a lot of similarities, really, that in some ways I hadn't thought of that until just the other day.
Yeah, it's really remarkable when you think of, T.J. Lang was talking about that this past week during that run that they've had. It hasn't just always been, okay, they're just running everybody out of the building.
Yeah.
They've had some knockdown, grind-out kind of games along the way, including one against the Chicago Bears team that, while they were not in the playoff hunt, while they had a numerous amount of injuries all over the place, really put together their best performance on that day at Soldier Field and trying to upset Green Bay and disrupt that playoff push that they were in the midst of. But yeah, it almost played out the exact same way. You get a good 2-minute drive there. You get Mason Crosby in a manageable field goal position to make that run and to make that field goal. And here we are. So for the Packers to be in this position now, it's almost you almost kind of have to laugh a little bit, because it doesn't happen on accident. When you have this many games in a row, when you pull out these many close contests when you need them, there's a lot that goes into that, and I think you got to give Mike McCarthy credit for them being in this position now and a chance to represent the Packers potentially again in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm not sure if from 4-6 to the final four is some kind of slogan that anybody, you know, wants to put on a T-shirt. Obviously, the Packers are hoping this is not done, and being amongst the final four teams standing is not the goal here. They want to keep this going and see how far it can go. But yeah, when you think back to where this team was, and like I've talked about before, I remember Mike McCarthy walking to the podium in Washington after the Sunday night loss to the Redskins and saying, "You take your sixth loss, your backs are up against it," you know, and they knew from that moment on, every game essentially has been do or die, with the exception maybe of the Detroit game when they knew by kickoff they had a wild card spot. But so much on the line in so many games in a row, and they just keep winning.
Yeah, and think about this too, Mike. I don't know if you got a chance to see the photography of Evan Siegel, our wonderful photographer who I've worked with now for over 10 years. A real good glimpse of Aaron Rodgers and Jared Cook in the locker room afterwards. Embracing.
I did see that picture. Phenomenal photo.
Unbelievable. And if you haven't seen it, check it out. But basically, it's just, you can, it's Rodgers' back is to the camera, but you see Jared Cook's facial expression. First time in his NFL career making a playoff appearance, and just the emotion in his eyes and the smile on his face, it really does sum this whole thing up. And while a lot of these guys on this team have had this playoff experience before, I think the joy is something that everybody could relate to. And just being able, yeah, there's been some tough losses along the way. Yeah, there's been some close calls. But right now, they're defining themselves, and they've gotten two wins so far to make this postseason run happen. You need two more to take home a Lombardi trophy.
All right, sounds good. With that, Wes, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, we got some interesting insight from Mike McCarthy on Monday about that final play to Jared Cook, the 36-yard pass down the sideline that set up the game-winning field goal from Mason Crosby. There's been a lot of different things tossed around in terms of, you know, did Rodgers draw it up in the dirt, so to speak? Was it completely, you know, an improvised thing in the huddle? McCarthy clarified things a little bit in the sense that he said in that two-minute drill, a lot of it really is on the quarterback, but they have a menu of play calls, protection calls, route concepts that Rodgers mentally can choose from based on the situation, what he feels that he wants to run at a given time. And I think what we saw there, and as McCarthy put it, Rodgers kind of orchestrated the drive. We saw Rodgers' decision-making really come into play after the sack because the Cowboys are bringing the pressure. And after the sack, the very next play, he calls a roll to the right to presumably avoid a potential blitz that might be coming. That pass was also to Cook, but was incomplete. Then the next play, he calls a roll to the left, again, anticipating the Cowboys are going to come with pressure, so keep them chasing me. Don't be a sitting duck in the pocket. Just a very careful orchestration, not exactly drawn up in the dirt, but yet improvised from the sense of play to play, he's figuring out what to call.
Yeah, I think, and McCarthy talked about this too, we've heard this in, you know, specifically practices, those last eight plays concept, and in the things that they practice in terms of, okay, two-minute drive, you need yardage, this is what we turn to. We hear it so many times, and I think sometimes people think it's a cliche when you hear Rodgers talk about things starting in practice and the preparation aspect of, you know, making those big plays and those big moments, how much that has an impact on those type of performances. But it's true. That is what it comes down to. What I'm absolutely flabbergasted by is you expect that out of Aaron Rodgers. You know he has a mastery of this offense. He's been in the system for a decade now. That makes sense. But seeing Geronimo Allison operating in it, seeing Jared Cook in his first season with the Packers operating in it, there are so many different factors that have to really line up for the play to work out. And someone asks about that in the Insider inbox. I mean, Rodgers is sitting there willing. You can just see him willing Jared Cook to catch that ball and keep his toes in after he throws it. As great as Rodgers is, he needs other people to step up and match that greatness, and Jared Cook was up to the task.
Yeah, that's really a good way to put it, having others step up to match what he's done, because that really is an incredible throw. It's in the perfect spot. There's no danger of an interception or a deflection or anything like that, but it's a heck of a tough catch to make. And yesterday, you and I were talking off camera, trying to remember exactly what game it was. It was a recent game, I think, at Lambeau Field, maybe the Giants game or the Vikings game, where there was a sideline pass to Jared Cook, and he makes the catch but is almost unaware of where the sideline is and doesn't get his second foot down. Could have been a 20, 25-yard gain, maybe something like that, and simply just gets the one foot down. The second one goes out of bounds. It's an incomplete pass. And to see that just a few weeks ago, and then to see his awareness of exactly where he was and exactly when he had to stop his feet, and he actually did that without even looking down at his feet. He kept his eye on the ball the whole time, which you have to do when a Rodgers screaming Mimi is coming at you at, you know, 70 miles an hour or whatever it is. But really just a remarkable play on both ends.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is Rodgers is so talented. He throws the ball so accurately and so precisely, that puts a lot of pressure on a receiver because they need to catch it. And that play for Cook, and we talked about it yesterday on the show, but it's incredible when you think of where his feet need to be, making sure that he catches the ball, making sure that both feet are down when he catches the ball, and it all lined up. But, you know, and McCarthy talked about it. I mean, Rodgers spoils everybody.
Yep.
That's just the way it is. Everybody understands that. That's the way things are in Green Bay. But credit to him and Alex Van Pelt, McCarthy, Tom Clements, all these guys, all the resources the Packers put into making sure that 12 has everything he needs on a given day. That's the reason why you do it. And in those moments, when a lot of people might be kneeling that out, when a lot of people might be looking towards the overtime, the Packers are looking at the scoreboard.
Yeah, and you also look at those last two plays, and as I mentioned, the first one on the roll to the right to Cook was incomplete, a nice pass deflection there by the Cowboys in the secondary, but both rollouts to the right and to the left, the protection was as good as Aaron Rodgers could have asked for. He makes that protection call because the rollout is planned to one side or the other, and the protection is there. Both of those are sort of extended plays in a sense that those offensive linemen have to block a little longer.
Right.
They have a little more space to protect with Rodgers on the move, but they can't let anybody get by because that will disrupt the timing of when Rodgers can throw the ball in order to find somebody open.
Yeah, and that's why I thought Lane Taylor was one of the MVPs of that play, because they were doing a lot of spying. They were mixing and matching it. Sometimes they were blitzing. Sometimes they were going with a three-man rush in the spy. But you have Crawford there. I believe that was Jack Crawford. There's two of them. he was spying him there, and he was made, like, his role on that play is to follow him if he rolls out. Taylor gets out in open space. If you ask any offensive lineman, any guard specifically, they'll tell you how difficult that is to get a body on a more mobile-type linebacker, defensive back player in open field. Taylor got enough of them, was able to give Rodgers that extra second to get off a good pass, and obviously we saw the result.
Definitely. Well, with that, let's throw it to another break. Wes, back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz there. And Wes, I know we talked at great length on yesterday's show about Mason Crosby, but that's a subject that's worth revisiting today in light of you talked to him in the locker room on Monday about the two big kicks at the end of the game and everything. There's some personal family inspiration going on there as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, and as you probably saw too when you were walking to the buses after the game, there was a massive family gathering area there for both the Packers and Cowboys and a lot of fans from both perspective. And I just asked Crosby, being from Texas, Georgetown, Texas, if he had any family there. And he mentioned his parents, his sister, two nephews, and his niece all made the trip and were able to watch him make the kick. But one thing that was interesting, his younger brother, Reese, was not able to make it because his wife and Mason's sister-in-law, Brittany, is actually just started chemotherapy for ovarian cancer that she was diagnosed with on December 14th. A really difficult situation. I did some research on that. I mean, and we all know how rare it is, but I didn't realize how exceedingly rare it is for someone of her age to be diagnosed with that. So I believe she's in her fourth or fifth week now, battling through that. And Mason, if you actually watch the game, he has a teal band on his right arm, which has the words "We Stand Together" on it. That was honoring her. The entire family was wearing it. He wore it against the Giants too, but you couldn't see it underneath those eight layers of clothing. He said he looked like a bodybuilder with all the stuff he had on that game, but in the dome, it was very apparent, and that was something that really meant a lot to him. Very close with his brother, very close with his family, and to have Brittany battling through that, wanted to be there to support her.
Yeah, you had mentioned in your story on Packers.com, Brittany is just 27 years old.
Yeah.
Certainly a difficult situation, and thoughts and prayers go out to everybody in the Crosby family, and wish Brittany the best through her treatment cycles. Interesting, though, that you mentioned the date December 14th, and I guess I don't know if Mason maybe was made aware of the diagnosis right at the time, but it was just a few days later that he hit the game
against
winner
Chicago.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
And so you wonder if he was aware of it then or perhaps found out about it later, but nonetheless, an incredible finish here, stretch run to the season for Mason Crosby in conjunction with the entire team. That 56-yard field goal the earlier one in that was also late in the fourth quarter. It's funny, you and I were talking about it. Just to give the fans a bit of a picture, we're in the press box in the end zone where that goalpost is, where Crosby is kicking there in the fourth quarter. But we're off kind of on the corner, so we don't really have a good view of the ball, and the televisions in the press box are, you know, 7-8 seconds behind with the delay, so we're not watching it on there. We're trying to watch it live. And when that ball left Crosby's foot on the 56-yarder, that crowd in the end zone that was near us, you heard a brief eruption because they saw the ball starting to leak out to the right, and they were about to start cheering for a missed field goal, and then it suddenly got quiet because the ball straightened back out and went through. Just a strange sequence of events from our perspective in terms of watching that and then seeing the officials signal that the kick was good.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of like a caught-looking kind of situation where the ball, you know, you think it's going one way and then it kind of slides over and hits the strike zone. That is exactly what it was. And he hit the first 51-yarder, too. It was perfect, right down the middle.
Yeah.
The second one, even, it kind of started off left, and it looked like, and then it knuckled back in, just narrowly got in there. He said he didn't hit that as cleanly as the first, but still felt okay about it. And that one as well kind of threw the fans off. The announcers, I think, from the Cowboys actually at one point thought that it was going to be no good. But both of them went through, and certainly that's the only way I knew it was a good kick, honestly, was that when you did hear the crowd die off, that's when you knew it was good. And Mason Crosby immediately went into his shell and prepared to get absolutely
mobbed by
people,
which happens.
So.
Yeah, and just to recap Crosby and some of these marks he has in postseason history here, the 56-yard field goal, the longest postseason field goal in Packers history and the third longest postseason field goal in NFL history. The two kicks back-to-back there extending his postseason record of 23 to 23 consecutive made field goals in the postseason, a streak that dates back to 2010. And then the 51-yarder at the end being the longest game-winning postseason field goal in league history. Just some remarkable things that Mason Crosby will take with him the rest of his life.
Aaron Rodgers said twice this past week he's the best kicker in the NFL. His long snapper, Brett Goode, who's been with him for most of that run, said Aaron hit it right on the head, and it's the way it's looking right now for the Packers and their kicker.
All right, well, with that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, another player for the Packers. We didn't actually talk about him much on yesterday's show, but it definitely bears some discussion here. Outside linebacker Nick Perry, we did mention he got the big pass deflection on third down there down the stretch that forced the Cowboys to kick the tying field goal in the final minute of the ball game. But he had another sack in the game as well, one that kind of gets lost because the Cowboys eventually converted in a long yardage situation to continue to move the chains. But that's four sacks now for Nick Perry with that crazy club thing on his on his hand. Really, the production that he's been able to sustain here playing outside linebacker with essentially one arm, it's pretty remarkable.
It is. I mean, it's honestly blown me away. Because typically, you know, it's always good when you're able to keep those guys on the field when they sustain a hand injury like that or any kind of break. But how effective guys can be with that is sometimes a big topic of discussion, just because for many players, it's really difficult. You can't shed. You have to rely more on your power. Well, for Nick Perry, that kind of plays to his strengths a little bit. And we already know what he's done in the postseason for the Packers. I think he's, what, top three in sack, you know, career sacks for playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly that number is off the top of my head. But for him to actually be able to do what he's done and give them the reps that he has gave them, it's crazy. And he did joke a little bit, though, with that pass deflection. He contends that if he wouldn't have had that cast, he would have picked that pass off. But when you only have one hand, there's only so much you can do, and he wasn't able to clamp it, so it ends up being a deflection. But still, a huge play at a really critical time and made the you know, the Cowboys settle for a pretty long field goal.
Yeah, I mean, he did the most he could. I can't imagine that he would have been able to actually catch that ball with the club thing on his hand. That really would have been quite the play, and obviously would have saved the game for Green Bay at that time. But yeah, give him credit. I mean, that Cowboys offensive line, we didn't hear much about Clay Matthews. We didn't hear much from Julius Peppers. Those guys were busting it out there every play. You could see it. It wasn't for any lack of effort of trying to get after Dak Prescott. But that Cowboys offensive line is the best run-blocking line in the league for a reason. And, you know, as we talked about yesterday, against a group like that, sometimes it's just being able to make that one play here or there that can affect things. And Perry was a guy who did that a couple of times.
He really did, Mike. And with Perry, too, and he mentioned this, the thing that's interesting about that club is really nobody wants anything to do with it. Perry doesn't want to have to use it because he wants to be able to grip and use his hands and, you know, be able, especially against the run, to defend. You need both your hands. But at the same time, offensive linemen also don't like it because that's kind of this swinging appendage that's coming at you. So it's an interesting thing where it really doesn't benefit either side. But for Perry, and especially we've talked since 2012 about his bull rush and his power.
Yeah.
When he gets a push on you, he might not be able to do everything, his normal arsenal of tricks. But once he gets you on your back of your heels, man, it's tough to recover.
Yeah, he's a powerful man, and it is funny. He's joked about how opposing offensive linemen kind of, you know, whisper to him and wonder like if he's gonna take a swing and hit him with that club on his hand. But anyway, for that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. You can find the team account at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.